Definitely for the Republican Senate. Radio. And so and I'm looking for a clip here for you, just so anyway, I mean, the Republicans have a real problem on their hands. The problem is that they can't get their act together. I mean, you can blame it on Trump. To what extent it's Trump's fault would probably be impossible to know from the outside, but all of the conflict that's going on in the inside of the administration can't be helpful, but the idea that they would come in and have the opportunity to cancel and replace Obamacare but wouldn't be able to come up with the law seems surreal, and I don't think you can blame that part on Trump. Now, it's ironic about the healthcare fight. I wanted to point out sometimes the good is the enemy of the great, and some of these people are looking for a great bill, others are just a good bill. But whatever the fight is between each senator, it's just a good or even a fair bill would help them survive as senators, as a party, and they can't even do that, and they have to know it. So it's just mind-boggling. And there's other questions out there. Is CNN dying? That's a good question for people who study these type of things. CNN is in a lot of trouble, and much of it is tied to this issue with the war with Trump, and Trump has been calling them fake news. And the fact of the matter is that CNN doesn't really have an answer to that issue. And so, you know, you can say what you want about CNN's history and their approach to news other than Trump, but it's devastating for them, I think, that they're called up for having fake news, and in the midst of defending themselves, they have to get rid of an entire team of reporters because of the fact that they come up with a fake story. And now it doesn't really help cure that afterwards that the son of Trump is found with emails and meetings with a Russian lady who's not connected to the government. None of it really helpful to Trump, except to say that within the confines of this debate, there is going to be a reckoning of CNN, and there'll obviously eventually be a reckoning of Trump later. But CNN is a business, and if your business is to deliver true news and you get caught with your pants down, then that's not really going to solve any problems for your business model. Here's a little bit on John McCain.
Senator John McCain is recovering well after an operation last Friday to remove a malignant brain tumor known as glioblastoma. With Senator McCain's permission, I spoke exclusively to two of his Mayo Clinic doctors about the details of his care. McCain had come in for a scheduled annual physical early Friday morning with no complaints except intermittent double vision and fatigue, which he attributed to an intense international travel schedule over the last several months. His doctors ordered a CAT scan to check for anything from a possible blood collection to a stroke. Upon review of the scan, doctors called McCain, who had left the hospital, and asked him to immediately return for an MRI. The scans revealed a 5-centimeter blood clot above the senator's left eye, which appeared to have been there for up to a week. The decision was made to perform an urgent operation. By 3 p.m., McCain was in the operating room undergoing a craniotomy to remove a tumor. Doctors made an incision above his left eyebrow to gain access to his skull, where they bore a 2-centimeter hole to remove the clot and the tumor. A pathology report revealed a primary brain tumor known as glioblastoma. It's the most aggressive type of brain cancer. It is the same type of tumor that Beau Biden and Ted Kennedy had. With treatment, which usually includes radiation and chemotherapy, the median survival is 14 months. but it can be 5 years or even longer. This is not Senator McCain's first health scare. In 2000, he was diagnosed with invasive malignant melanoma.
I'm having a lot of exposure to the sun when I was very young and having fair skin.
Doctors removed a dime-sized melanoma from McCain's left temple. That was the most serious of several other bouts with skin cancer. When McCain was campaigning for president in 2008, I had a chance to review all of his medical records. Details of his health since then have remained private until just now. His doctors at the Mayo Clinic, who've been treating him for several years, said it was McCain's gut instinct, knowing that something just wasn't right.
And we do have a call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Tom Justice here, Kelly.
Hey, how are you today?
I am well. And you?
Not too bad. What's on your mind?
Well, now that's interesting. You say not too bad. You get that from a lot of people. What scale are you working on there?
I'm trying to find out your question or comment.
Well, the topic today was schooling. What was it?
Oh,
what are you talking about today?
Yeah, no, folks, you know, I kind of spaced out a little bit with this news about McCain. We do have on the air right now. Let's take a break. Let me regroup. I've got a guest that has called in exactly when he was supposed to. Kelly O'Connell here, AM Las Cruces. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about school choice and homeschooling, and with an individual from the middle of the country who's got a lot of experience in this topic. We'll be right back. 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text. Hey, how's it going?
Good on this end.
Sorry about
that. You've had a good week so far?
Yeah, it's been a little hectic.
Well, I've had one of those, so I guess we're in the same club.
Yeah, so, but this news about McCain really threw me.
How so?
Oh, I don't know. It's just, you know, goes in for a minor operation and ends up having a brain tumor, so he's going to be out of the Senate pretty fast.
Well, you can't do what he's been doing without having an effect.
Right.
You know, if you follow the there's covenant breakers and covenant keepers.
Wow.
And what one brings good stuff and one brings other stuff, cause and effect.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Have you ever published? I'm sorry. Have you ever published anything?
No.
Did I ask you that?
No, you have not. And I have not.
Oh, okay. Well, you must.
I've just been trying to mind my own business.
I gotcha. All right, so.
What do you hope to accomplish today?
I want to save the world. How about you?
Good. We've got somebody who has that in hand, and you and I just need to be obedient. Yes?
I'm listening.
If Jesus doesn't have that in hand, there's nothing you and I can do. But in fact, if he does, we just simply have to follow direction and do what's within us, within our sphere of influence to do, right?
Right.
Yeah. If I don't take care of my part and I take care of somebody else's part, is it going to get done?
No, but give me your contact info, too, in case people want to get in touch with you. Is that okay?
Oh, sure. Sure. Email is Rev, R-E-V, D-R, Rev Doctor, Justice, at yahoo.com. Rather they start there than a phone number?
Sure. Okay, and how about credentials?
Well, what would be credentials? 40 years experience, 47 years married to the same woman.
All right.
13 grandkids, but some kind of credentials. Ordained by what, three or four different people in three or four different countries. Granted by life experience, a doctor of religious education. Because I realize if you're going to be good at it, you're going to have to get good by doing, not by going to a school somewhere. Even though I do have degrees that I have earned in that respect, I guess two different ways of earning them. one with scars and one without.
Okay, we're going to be on in just a minute, so how would you like me to introduce you?
Just somebody you met, and tell them how you got connected. That'd be the interesting thing, wouldn't it? The rest of it
we're
up
on
to
the
them
air.
To figure out.
We're on the air, so just follow me, okay?
Okay, yep.
It'll be a lot easier. All right, folks. Kelly here, 619, and I got a book. Had ordered a book the other day on cosmology and was reading it, and in the middle of the book I found a business card, and you might be shocked to find out that I actually did. I called the number that was on the card and got a call back, and the email on it was Dr. Justice, so I was kind of intrigued, Reverend Dr. Justice. So anyway, I had a very interesting conversation last weekend at Starbucks on my end. And so I had invited the gentleman to consider calling into the show on the topic of homeschooling, but there's a lot more to it as well. And so, Dr. Justice, are you there?
I am. Thank you for including me in.
Yeah, no problem. So I'm sure you were a little surprised when you got the phone call from the guy that bought your book, and you said you had a pretty big library, and then you liquidated it.
Yes, had probably, I don't know, several thousands of volumes that I'd been collecting over 40 years.
And how much of it was on cosmology?
Oh, boy, it ranged far and wide on all kinds of things. You know, when your name means seeker of truth, you're curious about everything.
Well, that's good. I won't ask.
You got one of the intriguing ones, though.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, the fact that it's impossible for things to self-organize.
Yeah, so the topic of the book was, and I'm trying to remember the author. I should have it in front of me, but I'll remember the author's name. But it's the idea behind the book was in the cosmological principles and the scientific principles that we know about the universe, there is not an original self-organizing principle. Is everything is derived from something else. And so the implication is there is a mind above the universe, or a will, a personality, however you want to say it, that is put everything into motion. And that itself would be quite an interesting show, but
yes, it would.
I don't have a profound understanding of it. I'm just kind of scratching the surface.
Everybody's scratching the surface. Don't let them kid you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, give us a little background of your history so people can kind of get an idea of where you've come from, what your experiences have been.
Well, 47 years ago, I was taken hold of by God, changed my life completely. My wife and I were about to get divorced. From there, God's taken us on a grand adventure through educating our own kids, but mostly about educating me, and then opportunities to go all over the world to talk with people about how do you get a hold of everything God has and apply it in your everyday life. Schools involved, honorary degrees involved, life experience degrees involved, and then phone calls from talk show hosts. So been a marvelous experience.
And you guys had a church or a church building, I should say, and you sold that, but you still have the church together and you meet in various places.
Yes, we have decentralized by God's direction, which is kind of the way things got it is taking the world or where he's showing up in the world. Well, we follow the usual. You need this, you need that, you need to do this, you ought to go after that. And for us, it never quite worked. We saw people grow. We have scattered people all over the place. But you always want to just follow after what's the next thing God has, the next season of life. It keeps it really simple that way. So sold the building, decentralized, got people meeting with people, people doing things with people such that I don't have to be doing, nor should I. If doing my job right, I should be equipping them to do it. So it's been great fun.
And your background is Protestant.
Yes, grew up Presbyterian. Wife grew up Methodist. God made us believers, gave us the Holy Spirit. Then through the Pentecostal denominations, the non-denominations, and now we're just trying to grow up and be genuine.
And you're located in what part of the country?
St. Paul, Minnesota area.
And what's the weather? What's the weather like right there, right now?
It's always marvelous. Today is going to be a hot, sticky one. The fog was so thick this morning you couldn't see the street. A marvelous Minnesota day. Getting ready for the state fair where it's always funky and sticky and crowds of people.
All right. So we were meant to, unless you want to talk about, I found the book, A Case Against Accident and Self-Organization by Dean Overman, who was a Washington, D.C. attorney who started doing some research into the topic of the cosmology, either the accident or the design of the universe, and ended up writing this book. But you and I were going to, had agreed that we would talk about homeschooling. How do you want to begin? What is homeschooling as far as you define it?
Well, the thing is, you got to decide jurisdiction, which means you got to figure out who they belong to. Do kids originate with parents, or do they originate with the state? And once you go from there, you understand that everybody homeschools. So if you recognize that, then you're able to learn how to make the most of that for the benefit of the next generation. If you accept the premise that you have to pass that off to someone who is a supposed expert, you're probably going to get less than what you were hoping for with your kids, either internally or externally or both.
Fair enough. Okay, so all parents have a jurisdiction to train their own children, which is, I mean, children have to be trained before they get to school so they know how to talk, and they maybe have some reading experience, but they listen to directions and stuff. What do you think is the biggest problem, if you had to sum up the biggest problem in the education system today?
Twofold. One, civil government involvement, and two, parents not recognizing the great opportunity they have.
And, you know, it seems that the schooling system in the United States for decades has implanted a sense of kind of a randomness. The school is there to teach you facts. It was not up to the school to teach morality or ethics or to instill any ideas about metaphysics, God, you know, all this stuff. And it really, I think, was harmful to children to grow up with the idea that education was just facts.
You are correct. In fact, if you don't have one, or your listeners don't have one, you'd want to get an 1828 dictionary, the original American dictionary, Webster. It gives a different definition of education than what we're practicing, which explains why we have the difficulties we have and the children have the hopelessness they have.
Right.
Because that one talked about you have to deal with morals,
mm-hmm,
and responsibilities, and those are quite different than the usual today.
Yeah, and there was it's just really kind of a default sense, and so let's take a break. We have some local news, and
sure.
So this is commercial radio, so we do have plenty of ads in it. But folks, we'll take a little break here and be right back with Dr. Justice Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450, talking a little bit about homeschooling. We'll be right back. I don't know if you can hear the sound feed coming through right now.
No, I just got you.
That's good.
So now this guy's in the same club you're in that you got the book by, a lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You must be one of the rare ones in that club that actually thinks larger than the dollar.
Well, I mean, you know, it is a business, so.
It is a business, yes, but it provides a service. It's supposed to be involved with justice, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, that's the theory.
like you say, some of these things have been lost.
Well, I mean,
which is
why
what you're doing is important, Kelly.
Well, I mean, you know, people don't really discuss at all natural law anymore. And at one point, natural law was the foundation. So
common law. Yeah, Holmes got us away from that, went to case law, which is how you get people away from their liberty.
Christopher Columbus Langdell introduced the case law study method into Harvard University.
Interesting. Harvard, that was founded to make sure the graduates had morals and could keep the country sound for liberty.
So when the dust of the current ministers lay in the ground, the future generation would be trained.
Yeah, yeah. Schooling. If you're not interested in the future generation, you're not interested in liberty.
Right. Of course, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, which is why what you're doing is such a grand necessity.
Yeah, so they actually want to get rid of this format on the station and turn it into a Spanish music station.
Are you surprised?
No, I mean, well, so, you know, nothing surprises me that much.
But now with the internet, you might not need that actual thing.
Yeah.
I mean, all kinds of stuff is possible now that is changing.
Well, this
radio stations themselves, newspapers are somewhat losing the effect they had.
I think my show has more listeners than the local paper has readers.
Probably. Yeah.
Well, the paper
people
has...
know they need some new information.
Uh-huh.
And they don't know where to get it.
So where do you want to go in the next step? We got about 15 seconds.
Well, we can talk in terms of the actual setup for New Mexico. That was intriguing. I looked at the Constitution and the preamble there.
We're on the air.
Don't know if your listeners
we're on the air. Hold on.
Read their Constitution or preamble lately.
Hey, don't talk. Just listen to me, okay? Okay, we're here with Dr. Justice from Minneapolis, St. Paul, minister. And so anyway, we were talking about homeschooling, and you had done some research on New Mexico. What did you find out?
Well, I'm always curious to see how things start. And the folks who started New Mexico had an interesting perspective on where they got what they got and where they wanted to go with it for those who came after them. The preamble for the state constitution references that they got what they got from Almighty God, and they wanted to do what's necessary to secure a state constitution. But their description of that was unique because they believed the state constitution was superior to the federal constitution as far as their liberties and blessings were concerned.
Wow. That's pretty amazing.
Don't know if that's what's being taught in the schools out there.
I wouldn't want to tell you. When I moved to town, the dropout rate in high school was 50%. So I think it's gone down a little bit. The governor has put a lot of effort into securing the education a little bit. But, you know, I want to ask you a question that's kind of derivative of the education system. You set off the air that unless you think about the future generations to teach them, they won't understand liberty. That's true, right?
That's true.
Now, here's a follow-up.
It's
kind of obvious. You have to train people to know what the community believes in, and you have to train them into the history of mankind. So our history in the United States is one of liberty, but I'm looking at what's going on in Washington, D.C., and it seems to be not just the president who's under attack, but the office is under attack, which is what it worries me. And to me, Trump is just the messenger, or he's a foot soldier. And if you want to put it into biblical terms, that God can use to kind of clean things up. But I'm worried about this idea that the left seems to have developed that each person is going to be a law unto themselves. And if they personally draw the conclusion that he should not be president, they have every right to undermine the presidency to get him out of there.
Well, what you're describing is anarchy.
Right.
The great philosophical dilemma of the one and the many. How does each individual maintain their integrity while living within a group of people who do the same thing? And if you don't keep those in balance, you're going to have anarchy, which is what's promoted on the one side. You have the collectivism, which is being promoted on the other side. And, of course, that's the genius of America, is they had a constitutional republic based on Christian teaching that went down the middle between those two.
You're quoting a book from Rush Dooney, but here's the question, and we got about a half of an hour now. I really would love to hear you describe what there is to gain and the techniques that you use to homeschool kids.
Well, the reason God gives kids is so the adults can grow up.
Okay.
So once you accept that premise, then it gives you an opportunity to learn the things you weren't taught when you were at their age.
Wow.
Because children are by nature imitators, as we all are, which is proof politically.
That's pretty heavy.
But simple.
Heavy but simple.
And the simple things.
Yeah. Heavy but simple. But, you know, what I'm really drawing a conclusion of is that So the society is broken right now and everybody feels that people are talking about it. How can we address that through the education system or homeschooling?
Well, the education system created the dilemma we have. It's the only door everybody's gone through. So you have to lay the responsibility where it should be. Because who hasn't gone through that? Even the ones, as you say, that dropped out, they looked at it and said, there's nothing here for me.
Right.
But they still went through the door.
Right.
So what we have today is the proof that the current philosophy in education is a success, not a failure.
Okay.
Because it was designed to take the allegiance off of God and off of the family and put it on the state.
Okay.
And that's what we see going on out there now. The government ought to do something. Well, the state, is, as Reagan said, is not the solution. It's the problem. So education, the homeschooling, is the great hope of the future. The current is going to burn itself out eventually. What's going to be left? And that's where the homeschoolers come in, that have a different perspective on what responsibility is. So I got great hope for the future.
Yeah, that's good. Well, let's take another one of our breaks here and talking to Dr. Justice here. Let's get you some weather. And it was rainy yesterday, hopefully rainy today. All right, so what we've got, I don't know, 20 minutes left. What do you want to make sure we cover?
Well, that'd be up to you.
No, it's
up to me. Enough opportunities for wild stuff.
No, it's up. Hold on, it's up to both of us. It is a collaborative undertaking.
I can range far and wide. Yeah. Anything I've said so far that intrigues you want to go further in?
Well, it's all intriguing. It's just the nature of the format is time constraint.
Yeah, and it is. All you're trying to do is sow a seed and seeing where it takes root. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or water where a seed has already been planted. That's your job. So now what are you going to do if they decide to eliminate you?
Sleep.
That's always a good thing. Yeah. Naps are good when you become an old guy, but you're not there yet.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people that are talking about the. A lot of people are upset. A lot of people wanted to do something. The figure that's been rolled out for the to save the format is $30,000 a month, which is a little rich. So, I assume that we're going to have Spanish language. Now, the left in the town has joined together to buy a micro station, 100 watts, and they're going to have, you know, local, a different DJ every day, and they're going to have music and talk about raising goats and everything. But I think what I'm going to do is broadcast a blog, a podcast in the morning, and then see where that goes.
Yeah. Get out social media. If it's a future generation you're looking for, those are the ones that are going to go that
way.
Back
on the
media.
We're back on the air.
Okay.
Okay, so we are talking to Dr. Justice now. To get a hold of Dr. Justice, Reverend, R-E-V-D-R, Justice, spelled as it sounds, at yahoo.com, if they want to get a hold of you. And all right, so, I mean, we can talk about the elements of homeschooling, but I think what's more interesting is this idea that the most exciting part of being a parent is you get to put your imprint of your beliefs on your child and see where that child takes it, right?
Yes, because you have some wisdom gained by experience that you can help them start from instead of have to get on their own.
In other words,
they can stand on your shoulders.
Yeah. The famous line that Newton used, he achieved what he did by standing on the shoulders of those who came before him. But let me ask you this. Let's say there's someone listening to the show who's a single parent, a single mother. She's at her wit's end. She can't even really cover her bills. The father doesn't support the child. She gets a little help from her family. How could somebody like that possibly consider homeschooling?
The same reason anybody can. Your children are going to help you organize your life. We've been taught how to be selfish, and life is scattered, and there's no order to it. Children, if you accept the responsibility, help you organize your life and your time. So a single mother, what does she want for her child? Just three things. She wants them to be able to read voraciously, not look at screens and play games,
right?
But read voraciously, learn how to write concisely, and learn how to speak clearly.
That is the classic triumvirate. The most ancient days forward, there was a focus on what you're talking about, was learning to listen and understand arguments, learning to reply to them and make your own arguments, and learning how to put that into words. It is remarkable how well educated the founding fathers were. That group of people created documents that are preeminent even today.
People risk their lives to get here, even as poorly as what here is here, because of that very thing, the light that shines out from that. Yeah. So a single mom, what's your network? Well, God had a network when the natural family isn't there, and that's your spiritual family. Who's the connection? You have a responsibility as a Christian to the widow and orphan.
Yeah,
we call them single parents.
All right, but we have a lot of people in this country that are unchurched, and we have a lot of people in this country that are non-believers, and there's been a massive growth in atheism and agnosticism, and it seems to be an ever-growing market. How do those people take part?
Well, they realize what they have now isn't working, and someplace it is. And maybe what's not working is what was left out of their education.
Such as?
That's usually the case. Well, you haven't been taught that spiritual things are important. Not
right.
Church. Institutional may not do it. The institutions always fail because they organize to keep the institution alive. But the church itself is not an institution.
The church is a group of people. All right. So actually, we're trained in the society that spiritual things are not important, they're marginal issues, and it doesn't really matter as long as you, I don't know, as long as you don't break the laws, then you're fine.
You mean as long as you obey the state?
Exactly.
But there's not a day goes by that everybody in this country doesn't break the laws, because there are so many regulations or whatever, it's impossible not to.
Three felonies a day. There's a book out there. I've got it, actually. Three felonies a day. Everybody breaks at least three felonies a day. There's been a proliferation of federal rules that is so massive, laws, you can't help but break them.
Well, yes. But the thing is, as Jefferson said, that if it violates the Constitution, it's null and void on its face. So you're actually not. But you have to know that, which means you have to educate. So if a mom taught her kids how to read and write and articulate, speak, and only taught them the New Mexico Constitution and the Constitution of the United States and the history around that, that kid's going to be a success.
Wow. That's incredible. Wow, this topic brings up a lot of different subjects. Hold on a second here. We do, folks, have a break. One last break here, and we'll be right back. I know somebody's calling in, but I'm not going to take any calls. 645 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. We'll be right back. You know what would be an interesting topic?
What would?
How the education system has impacted the idea of family and friendship.
Yes, would be a good one, wouldn't it?
Because I think that friendship as a practical undertaking is dead, and there is not a substructure of education or sentiment to sustain it, and so people now interact with each other instrumentally.
Yes, but doesn't that prove they're desperate for friendship?
All right, so the same person
They just don't know how to go about it.
Right.
But they actually do know how to go about it. That's the thing.
How would that impact the topic?
Most people know what's exactly right to do because they know what doesn't work, which means just do the opposite of what you're doing.
All right, so I'm going to bring that up, and we're going to be back on the air in about 30 seconds.
Okay.
Time flies on the air.
It means we're having fun. Now, I'm leaving you with all the calls and the questions.
That's fine.
So boy, have I set you up.
Well, we got to do this again if you're enjoying yourself.
I always enjoy myself. I've used up all my bad days.
We're just about on the air. What do your friends call you, by the way?
The blue-collar ones call me Tommy, and the white-collar ones call me Tom.
All right. Okay, so we're finishing up a segment with Dr. Justice, whose friends call him either Tommy or Tom, but not Tomcat, probably.
Well, those days are gone,
okay.
Thankfully.
All right, so here I have a question for you. A good citizen has certain attributes that I think you could argue a friend has certain attributes, a good citizen has certain attributes that would be impacted by education. I have drawn the conclusion from personal experience and observation that friendship as a category and as an undertaking in the United States, in our society, has fallen into disrepair and is on the wayside. How is friendship and citizen, being a good citizen, how are those things affected by your education?
The education system we have is on the cattle method. You herd them together and you move them towards market. So you're forced to interact with people you may not normally be able to connect with. And, of course, then you've got the cliques, the hierarchies, and all of that, which makes that even more difficult. But friendship is what everybody's looking for. Someone said if you die with five friends, you are a success. But friendship is that person you relate to personally. A citizen is that person you relate to that's not a friend, but you approach on the same terms. which should be what school should educate you for to be a good citizen. How do you relate to people that you are not directly connected with so they end up with the same peace and prosperity that you do?
And so we, you know, there's been something in the news about civics, and Richard Dreyfuss, star of Encounters of the Third Degree or whatever the name of that film is, and Jaws, he was saying the thing that's been left out of schooling is civics. But, you know, I think there's an element. Aristotle wrote about it quite eloquently about what friendship was and the elements of it and the need for it. I see there's a breakdown in being a good citizen or an educated citizen who knows how to be patriotic, and there's a breakdown in friendship. And in my mind, somehow they're tied together.
I think you're correct. So we have to draw the conclusion, if that is necessary, then someone is doing something to keep that from happening. And where's the place that kids spend 6 hours a day for 12 years when they're very impressionable?
Right, school.
Yeah.
So is school...
Away from their parents.
So according to you, school is teaching kids to be anarchists.
Or collectivists, either one. Anything but liberty.
All right. Well, this is we're going to be done in a couple of minutes here, but we're just scratching the surface of scratching the surface. But what questions or thoughts would you leave with people if they were never to listen to you again or talk to you again? What questions would you want to leave with them on related to these issues?
Two simple questions that you need to ask anybody who would be inclined to get you to do anything. By what standard? Class on civics, okay? By what standard are we going to do civics? And by whose authority?
All right, so what's our source of authority now? It used to be a long, long time ago, maybe a century or more ago, it used to be the Bible. What is the source of authority now?
The Bible is still the authority. We're just getting the dark side of it. It's a blessing and a curse, you know.
All right, so you and I had talked about covenant, and I'd said that covenant is the most redolent, the most powerful idea in the history of government, and I think that you pointed out that there was a more larger than the contract theory, because there is, it's expansive, it's elastic, there's a blessing on one side, but there's a curse on the other. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, a contract is a particular. And people enter into those all the time. The most essential contract in a free society is voluntarism. You voluntarily get together with people to solve a problem. You don't look to somebody outside you to do that. Covenant is both particular and general, because it does encompass all of life. And everyone is in a covenant with God, either as a covenant keeper or a covenant breaker. You can't avoid it. But if you don't know that, you can't walk in the benefits of it. You complain about the consequences that you have no idea that you are a part of causing.
All right. So an example of this for the sake of brevity, in Israel and in the church, one of the main covenants is marriage. When people get divorced, there are ripples that go across time, that go through people's lives, and people's lives are diminished. And many people never recover from having gone through a divorce, either as a participant, as a child. And I think that's part of what you're getting at, is we become a nation of covenant breakers. And instead of enjoying marriage and family more than we used to, we enjoy it less, even though we've got 100 times more freedom.
Well, we call it freedom, but it's actually license. I can do what I want to do, and you can't tell me I can't. That's not freedom. Freedom is I do what I need to do to cause the effect that benefits both me and others.
So freedom is a free will choice to do what benefits you anyway.
Well, free will, it's you choosing to obey the laws that are there. And by that, I mean the laws of nature and of nature's God, which sounds familiar to where we started the confederation that put all the states together originally, the separate countries that came together to form these United States.
Right. Okay.
Okay. marriage, as you said, is the basic building block of a safe and prosperous society. That's not been granted to the state even to address at all. That's a family and a church responsibility.
Right.
Family first, church decidedly secondary.
Okay.
And you see the consequences of that not being there are recognized. Yeah.
It's absolutely staggering, the impact of it. And so many of these things seem like they just came upon us, but it was by design through attempts to reorganize the society, as you say, towards the government. And if you want to put a name on it, the Frankfurt School, political correctness, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, basically the socialism, man is God. We don't want God to be God, we want man to be God. And it started way back in the middle 1800s, in this country anyway.
Yeah, well, yeah. Marxism itself is from the beginning of the 1800s, and so... although it has not been proven as an economic theory, it has taken root as an organizing principle.
Social theory, yeah, yeah. It bankrupt us both, but you and hard for people to accept that now. But yeah, what people don't realize is government comes in four forms, and civil is the least significant form of government, not the most. Which is not being touted at us.
What are the other forms?
Well, the most significant form of government is self, because the self is going to answer to the creator, endowed by our creator with certain inalienable rights. That's the highest form of government. The second highest, as you mentioned, is family. That's where the individual learns that and learns how to flourish in that. And then the third most would be the church. The spiritual organization that everyone's involved with, and everybody is involved in a spiritual organization of some kind. The best one would be the one that God calls you out of the foolishness and into his wisdom. And then, of course, the fourth is civil, which is supposed to protect the first three.
Right.
Yeah.
The purpose, according to John Locke, the purpose of government was not to restrict freedom. It was to expand it. But, Speaking of expansion, we're about out of time here. Any concluding thoughts, Dr. Justice?
Well, you give me great hope for the future of my grandkids. The fact you're out there in New Mexico, one of the primary states that's going to be a part of the liberty that we will walk into down the road, I am greatly blessed that you would include me in that.
Well, it's been a real pleasure. It's fascinating. It's about 6:58, Doctor. And to get a hold of you, revdrjustice@yahoo.com, Reverend Dr. Justice at yahoo.com. And will you welcome any and all emails?
Well, I'm like you. You can't learn something without somebody asking you something.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
And, of course, they can get a hold of me through you, too, if they can't get the other way.
Right. Okay. Thank you for coming on the show. It's been illuminating, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks. So you can see why I wanted to bring him on the show. You know, I got this card, and it just had I don't have the card with me, but it had his email. And it had a number and I think a little thing. I can't remember what the motto on it is, but I thought, wow, this guy's interesting. If he bought this book, he must be interesting. So I called him up and it was probably talked about 45 minutes. I mean, a brilliant guy. All right. So Ben Rawson's coming and this is where the story ends. The Sunday is 523-1450 Kelly O'Connell, 805-6180, your text line. Let's get it on Death Row Radio. We'll be back. Oh, All right, so what do you think of Dr. Justice? We spent the first hour after a little news on John McCain's terrible diagnosis, talking to a gentleman. I was reading a book, and in the middle of the book was a card. It was actually, if you want to meet people, it's a brilliant idea. But there was, I don't know if he was using one of his cards as a bookmarker or if he left it in there on purpose. He never told me. But the book is called A Case Against Accident and Self-Organization, Dean L. Overman. It's very interesting. It's available on Kindle for 7 clams, so you might want to look it up. But I've always been hit by the fact that the plausibility of the universe generating itself is zero. We got a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, good morning, Kelly. It's Marty.
Marty, good morning. Nice to hear your voice. What's going on?
Yes, sir. We started homeschooling 4.5 years ago, or maybe it was 5 years ago, about 2012, regardless. And I want to tell anyone who's listening out there, we were scared to death. We were absolutely scared out of our wits, but we saw the school system just absolutely failing our children. And we just couldn't take it anymore, so we had to move in that direction. And there's a little upstart program out there. It's called Mother of Divine Grace. It was started by a woman who's a graduate of Thomas Aquinas College in California. It's an American success story. She started with about five, maybe a little later, not long ago anyway, 1999 about. And she's up to about 8,000 students now.
Wow.
And she doesn't cost much. And they lay out the curriculum for you. The Mother of Divine Grace has counselors. You have a one-on-one with them about once a month. And they coach you on the direct, you know, how you're doing, what direction. And they have the curriculum for you, what books that you need to read and everything. And it's been probably in the top three decisions I've ever made and my wife's ever made in our lives. It's made that big of a difference. So anybody listening out there wants to homeschool and you're terrified, take the leap. Give it a shot. You can always go back.
Oh, that's.
But you won't.
Okay. Is one of the other top three deciding to take your retirement and buy a Corvette?
For me, sir, it would be a Cobra edition of the Ford Mustang.
Oh.
High performance.
I like it. Well, one great thing about homeschooling is it certainly increases the number of valedictorians and homecoming queens.
That's true. But remember he was talking, he just touched on a little bit about the click. And
yeah,
what was really getting to us was I have three kids, and all of them were, I don't know how to put it. There's a disharmony or dysfunctionality about public school where kids get in the clique. Punishment that they inflict on the children not in their clique is, and you're never going to stop that. I mean, that goes back to prehistoric times. You can have all these campaigns about bullying that you want.
Wait a minute.
It's not going to stop.
Cavemen had cliques?
They did.
Wow. Scary.
You betcha. There were the alpha males and the alpha females, and they didn't let the beta males and the beta females in their clique.
I'd hate to see the hazing in that situation. But, a few clubs to the head. Hey, Marty, thanks for the call. Great call.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, have a good day. Hey, you know, folks, I've been thinking if this, we had talked about the format changing. I never mention this. But sometimes you hear the voice come on, an English accent. Blog Talk Radio occasionally at the end of the show, but I always blog podcast this at the same time. It's a multicast simulcast that goes to the computer, so all these shows are saved. And so I think what I might do is maybe start off with an hour a day. I used to do it with Canada Free Press, from Toronto. I used to do their show on the weekend, so I might do a daily show. We'll just see what, you know, how many people tune in. But if you have a computer, and most people do, that is a way to stay connected. In any event, we do have Ben Rossin here and one of his progeny. Oh, there we go. Good morning, Ben. How's it going?
Going great, Kelly. How are you this morning?
Good. We're sending out a message on Facebook.
That's right. This morning we're going to try to do the show Facebook Live, and so I've got on my Facebook page, we've got the video up, and so I'll try to figure out how to do this well. But we've got Kelly there and me, and my son William is with us in the studio this morning.
William was supposed to be holding the phone up, but he's failed in this job so far. But he's failed for not having a chance to do it. So
that's right.
Are you going to hand it over to son or what?
We are. Willie, why don't you step on over there? All you right. can hold that, and then we'll be ready to go.
Passing of the torch here. Passing of the iPhone. Okay, so I just want to sum up from the last hour. I thought the guy's absolutely brilliant and very well-educated, and it just goes to show you, I think, that if you build yourself a library and dig into it, you can become a very well-educated person, you know?
Absolutely, Kelly. Reading is very important. You know, the last caller you had was talking about homeschooling, and I'm a product of homeschooling. My parents homeschooled me from kindergarten to through high school.
Wow.
And a lot of what you do there is you spend a lot more time reading, and that's a very good thing.
Were you the starting quarterback of the football?
I was the star of every sports team we had, Kelly, and the Valley Victorian to boot.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
Well, Kelly, I thought I'd talk, first of all, about a community meeting that I had last night for the Desert Mirage community. The Desert Mirage community, we had a meeting at one of the residents' home, and invited a bunch of neighbors to come out and talk about the road situation, mowing, and what kind of maintenance needed to be done on the road. There was some erosion and where to take care of those, and potholes and other things. So it's real important for me. You know, it's a little mundane to talk about on the radio, but those are the kind of things, Kelly, that really get me excited, because I can go to a situation like that, solve it, and make the little things, a road situation, a little bit better.
So all politics is local.
All politics is local.
What does that mean?
It means that you can be very involved. And that's where it starts. What people are dealing with every single day of the week is driving their own road and getting annoyed at that pothole on their way to work, and then on the way back home being annoyed at it again. And so it's important when we can resolve those little annoyances in life and make things a little bit better.
Very nice. All right. Well, let's we've got a little break here. Got Ben Ross, and what are we going to talk about when we come back?
Kelly, we're going to talk about the upcoming county commission meeting.
Fantastic. I can't wait. 523-1450, 8056, 1802 text. I have a new text phone, so it's a Samsung. It's a step in the right direction. The other one was from, I think, Windows, or was it Microsoft? Same thing, spawn of Satan. We'll be right back. Well, we are talking with Ben Ross, and keep John McCain in your prayers. They found out that he has a very aggressive form of brain cancer, and he is not long for this world if the statistics are right. So anyway, he's been a very loyal, a very patriotic guy. You can disagree with his politics, some of his statements, but he is true blue American. Okay, so... Excuse me, Ben, what's in this upcoming meeting?
Kelly, so just to remind your listeners, we're doing a Facebook Live video, and to announce to those watching the Facebook, glad to have you here. You've got Kelly O'Connell and Ben Rossin here on the Facebook Live,
baby.
Trying something new.
Yeah, baby.
But Kelly, this upcoming county commission meeting is going to be a pretty interesting one. We've got several controversial items on there. We've got the budget coming up. So the final budget approval is on Tuesday. That budget is overspending revenues by about $1.3 million plus capital purchases. So a huge dipping into reserves to cover both capital purchases and then also $1.3 million of regular spending. And so that's going to be a topic that I'll be bringing up. I'll have an amendment to try to bring that budget into revenue meeting expenses, which I think is a responsibility that we have. And we'll see if there's any support from the commission for having a responsible budget.
That sounds good. So we occasionally make national statements, right?
Sure.
What do you, can you remember any of them from the Canada Commission?
Yeah, we've had items where we've told, I'm trying to think, no drilling. We've had a one from Commissioner Garrett that wanted to have no drilling in the state of New Mexico. We had another one about global warming that he introduced. We've had several of those type of things.
Can we get a national request for a mental health exam of Maxine Waters? She is apparently running for president.
Boy, it starts earlier and earlier.
Indeed. All right. So what are some of the important up and coming questions that the County Commission is going to deal with?
Well, another item that we have on next week's agenda is the Internal Audit Committee. So the County Commission finally, or the county finally, has an internal auditor. And that internal auditor is setting up an advisory committee to give him some direction. And so we'll be setting up the makeup of that committee. And then we have a rehash of the bus system again. So we'll be talking about that one again. That was delayed 2 weeks ago. So we'll have that coming up. And then finally, Kelly, we have a ordinance that I've put on the agenda to allow ATV vehicles on county roads. And specifically, this would help the farmers who have a vehicle that they're using for farming that they need to be able to drive along the county road to get to their next area. So
don't they do that already?
They probably do that already. It's just not currently legal. So we'll try to get that passed.
We have a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly O. Good morning, Ben. This is Frankie.
Good morning, Frankie.
What's up, Frankie?
Well, I want to talk to Ben. I sent you a couple of emails. I didn't get a response. I was getting ready to call Kelly to send out the rescue crew. But yeah, this bus thing, you know, remember we talked about that. What about my idea about the taxi shuttle thing? You know, didn't you bring that up?
Absolutely. So the important thing the argument that I've had on this bus system is it's a redundant service. We already have a city bus system. And we should be contracting with the city of Las Cruces to extend that bus system instead of creating a completely new overhead on the system.
What about Uber?
Well, I guess you could do that too. But I was talking about if somebody up there in the commission is saying we got to spend tax dollars for whatever reason for a small amount of ridership. Well, that same tax dollars and less could be expended by using, like, Las Cruces shuttle system.
Absolutely.
You know, like the taxis and stuff. I mean, if that's the case. I mean, you know, nobody likes to pay money for something that nobody else is willing to pay for themselves. You can get into that whole nonsense. But, I mean, if you want to try to help out people, somehow, some way, I think it, and I'm not advertising for them, but I'm saying Las Cruces shuttle service, you know, would probably could work out something that would be a heck of a lot cheaper than this nonsense on this expenditure that you've been talking about.
Well, you know, Frankie, and you make a good point there about the administrative compared to the operating costs. The money just isn't getting down to the people who need it. When you look at, there's 22 bus systems in New Mexico. Average bus system spends 24% of its operating revenue on administrative expenses. And so the majority of that money then is going to operations and to funding the buses and getting the buses to be able to run and on time and that kind of thing. The South Central Regional Transit District only not has 24%, but has 71%. So of their operating budget, 71% of that then goes into administrative expenses. And that's a huge ratio that's way out of line, but it's because we're overpaying people at the top. And then the individuals that really need service at the bottom of the system aren't getting it.
Well, I'm with you 100% on that. And I don't understand where there's a lacking of logic for somebody not to see that to the degree of fixing this to the point where it cuts common sense. I don't get this, Ben. I really don't.
That's right. And, you know, Frankie, I think it's really valuable that the two of us agree on something like this, because the challenge that we're having at the county commission right now is it's being turned into, at the last county commission meeting, we had somebody come up and say, Rawson just hates poor people. No, what I hate is misspending money like we're doing right now. But unfortunately, the other side is getting into a name-calling dispute instead of looking at the numbers and facts and working to make the system better.
Well, I agree with you. Like, you know, we've talked about this before, but I just can't understand, you know, me being a learned liberal, and I'm 100% behind you on this thought process. And of course, I don't believe you hate poor people. The reason and rationale you gave is 100% correct. I mean, you're still trying to do something for, quote, the poor people, but without wrecking the pocketbooks of the taxpayers.
That's right.
I just don't get where the people are not connecting with that.
That's right.
All right, Frankie, thanks for the call.
All right, bye.
All right, so, okay, Ben. So, I'm as Frankie was talking, I was listening to him, but also skimming an article, When Institutions Go Left. He says, this is Emmett Tyrell. He says here, my conclusion was that, this is in the middle of the article, but he says, my conclusion was that when any entity falls under the dominance of liberalism, it loses all sense of its fundamental purpose. A city loses all sense of its purpose, which is governance. A university loses all sense of its purpose, which is education. So we're talking here about trying to move people who are in need, and we have a small number of those people, apparently, and they want a giant bus system. So there's a bigger issue here. We have a call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show's this person, that person. If you just called in, call back. I do apologize. But I think that's true. I'm just reading this, and I think it applies to the situation. You've got an ideologically driven bus or mass transit system for an area in which it really doesn't fit in. And I remember hearing this speech by Billy Garrett during NAACP banquet, and I thought, well, that's where this guy's got this from. This is why he's got this bug in his bonnet, you know, we've got it. The number one problem in urban area or rural areas, so therefore we have to have a giant bus system. Thanks for the call. Oh gosh, I don't know if it must be my incompetence because I'm pushing the button and I'm hanging up on him. But anyway, call back and we'll give it a third try. You know, if we could handle it through this smaller, what did Frankie bring up?
Frankie brought up smaller buses. There's a private bus system out there, Las Cruces Shuttle. That could be something to do. Las Cruces Dial-A-Ride could be an option. There's a lot of options out there, but unfortunately, the other side doesn't even want to have the discussion.
This is Kelly. Are you there?
Yes. Good morning. This is Edward.
Yeah, Edward, sorry if I hung up on you. Go ahead.
It's okay. I was going to bring up couple of issues for Mr. Rawson. And, you know, I used that bus service actually a couple of days ago.
Great.
I needed to get to El Paso and I didn't have transportation and I had to pick up a vehicle and come back to Cruces. And there was five people on the whole bus. He's kind of right, and they charge $3. It's a very nice service to have. But before I left, I was checking the schedule. You know, right after we left, there was another bus coming like 15 minutes later with five passengers. Why would you have so many buses leaving every 30 minutes or 15 minutes? Why don't they just, I mean, they could continue the same service, but they could have it like maybe twice in the morning with a big longer stretch so they could, you know, accommodate, you know, different people that they like to get to El Paso.
Well, and Edward, this is a fantastic call. One of the things I really like that you mentioned there is that the cost is $3. What that means, Edward, is that you are not on the South Central Regional Transit District system. You're on another system that comes up from El Paso to Las Cruces, and that's that system is a separate system from the one that we're talking about. And I think people are getting a lot of those systems mixed up with each other, and that's where I keep saying, this South Central system is a redundant system for services like the one that you were on that are already out there.
Yeah. And, you know, they're using this humongous bus that can take about 70 people or whatever. You know, I didn't count the seats, but why can't they use a smaller version if it's only going to be 5 people?
And still be able to provide
as a business. But then I tried to call other services from Uber to, you know, Las Cruces Shuttle, and all of them are around $45, $50 to $50-something for the one-way trip. And they take you only to the airport or, you know, different locations. So that's one of the...
And, Edward, and so one of the issues here is that you're radically underpricing the cost of the service.
Yes, yes. Hey, how can you, for $3, I couldn't even drive, you know, ride a motorcycle over there for that price.
You couldn't ride a donkey down there one way for $3.
Sure. That's one of the things. But they shouldn't have so many buses leaving within 30 minutes or 15 minutes when they only have 5 passengers.
That's a good point. Thank you,
and
Edward.
Another thing I was going to ask the commissioner, you know, we have an indigent tax in this county.
Correct.
And the people were already paying, that was subsidizing the health insurance for people who were unable to pay for their medical costs. So since Obamacare under their Affordable Health Care Act has passed, and we are already subsidizing by increasing our premiums 3 times what we used to pay, so why are we still paying the indigent?
That's a good question. Thank you. Thank you, Edward.
Okay.
Edward, thank you for calling. Thank you for the questions. Okay. Good points. All right. Did you want to comment on that last one?
I would like to. Edward, I appreciate you bringing that up. The indigent tax, the state now intercepts it from the county. So that money, even though we pay it here at the county, never gets back to the county. It's intercepted at the state, and the state has used that to pay for the expansion of Medicare and Medicaid that everyone talks about, the additional people on that coverage. And, I mean, that's really what we're talking about when we talk about Obamacare. There's more coverage out there, but it's extremely expensive. It's subsidized quite a bit. And this pocket of money, the indigent tax, is one of those things that's been stolen by the state to pay for their expenses due to Obamacare. So that's a good question. Unfortunately, we can't get out of that. That is the state's using that now. And, Kelly, I know our time is just about up here, but I wanted to mention 2 other things real quickly. The Doñana County's website was just ranked 7th in the nation by the Center for Digital Government. So if you're looking for something to do with the county government, go to doñanacounty.org. You'll be impressed with all the information that's there and available for you. And lastly, Kelly, Dasso is holding a Fall Citizens Academy. They do this every spring and fall, but it's a great opportunity for citizens to come out, see what our officers go through, get some real-life examples that they'll go through there. So if you're interested in that, you can get the information to apply for that on the Doñana County website as well.
Perfect. Well, thanks for coming in for the Rossin Report.
Thank you very much, Kelly. And for those of you watching on Facebook, thanks for joining us on Facebook.
And, folks, we will be right back. Thanks for tuning in to the most of the show. We've got a little bit more, and we'll take you into the local news. All right, so anyway, appreciate Ben coming in. Now, Rosie O'Donnell has stirred up the hornet's nest by encouraging folks to go and play a push Trump off a cliff again game. And so when I was researching the story, I came across an article I thought you might find notable from a little bit earlier this year, May. Rosie O'Donnell's daughter, Chelsea, tells how the former View host tried to pull her clothes off to find her tattoo, threatened to hit her with an empty wine bottle, and told her she could kill her if she wanted to. She says that Rosie O'Donnell is essentially an alcoholic, an abusive parent, and she had told, Rosie had told folks that the daughter had run away and she didn't know where she was, when in fact that the daughter says that she did know exactly where she was, but that they're alienated and that they're never going to be close again. And the young lady has gotten married in the meantime, so it must be strange to have a celebrity as a parent, as an adopted parent. So kind of an odd story. All right, now I've got a little story here from you. I thought I'd get your response on it. MSNBC Reverend saying that it is heretical to pray for a president like Trump.
Make of this laying on of hands and this embrace of Donald Trump by the evangelical right. Of the Christian right.
Yeah, and this very, very, very extreme agenda by Ryan and McConnell. It is a form of theological malpractice that borders on heresy. When you can pray for a president and others while they are prey, praying on the most vulnerable, you are violating the most sacred principles of religion. So we have this extremist Trump Republican agenda that takes health care, transfers wealth to the greedy. That's hypocrisy and sin.
Jesus, you stay with us because, you know, the question I have then is why are all of the evangelical Christian voters so consistently voting for these policies that often hurt them when their religion that they profess, you know, that they follow mm-hmm. so reveres the poor and so talks about caring for the poor?
You know, I think, to me, there's not a lot of hopeful things to say about this hypocrisy, but I actually want to point to something that I do think is hopeful about it, which is that I think it liberates the rest of us, because for decades, this right-wing evangelical movement has tried to claim that they're doing things on behalf of some higher calling, and I think they're just revealing themselves to be just another power interest group in Washington, like the coal industry or teachers' unions, and we should treat them as any other industry jockeying for their influence and accord them no moral superiority on any public question.
In other words, God is in favor of leftism. That's what I would take from that. And but the Bible says, 1 Timothy 2:2, of first of all, that I urge that petitioners' prayers, intercessions, and thanksgiving be offered on behalf of all men for kings and all those in authority, so that we may lead tranquil and quiet lives in all godliness and godliness and dignity. This is good and pleasing in the sight of God our Savior. But, you know, I mean, the idea that praying for the president is a heresy is, I mean, I think people are taking this way too far, this anti-Trump movement. And now we've got Joy Reid saying that basically the GOP is embracing Putin because of he's advancing white Christianity.
Unfortunately, this whole Russia scandal is undermining trust and confidence in our system.
MSNBC.
Joy, let me get you to respond to that. I mean, President Obama may have started out wanting a reset or wanting more flexibility,
right.
But he certainly ended
yeah.
with some pretty tough sanctions as a punishment for Russia's meddling. He took away those compounds. It's now a Republican president who at least reportedly has received the request from the Russians to give them back. What do you make of just the role on the question of Russia between the two
yeah.
parties?
It's amazing because, as you said, the Obama administration tried this idea of a reset when Putin was briefly out of the Russian presidency. It didn't work. They quickly learned that Russia is still Russia, and the reset was sort of put aside. We went back to the sort of traditional posture of the United States. I mean, my old Cold Warrior Reaganite father must be spinning in his grave to know that the United States, which used to, you know, he was African, so the desire to limit the expansion of Russian
yeah.
spheres of influence led us to support the apartheid government in South Africa
right.
over Nelson Mandela. Now we have a Republican Party that not only at its base is becoming Putinite, pro-Putin. You're seeing this acceleration.
And it's not just the president. I mean,
there are
loud voices in
yes.
conservative media
yes.
who
yes.
celebrate Assange.
That's right.
Who praise just the brute strength
that's right.
of Putin.
That's right. And for a lot of reasons, the alt-rights, you know, for these sort of weird sort of white nationalist reasons, they feel he's advancing white Christianity, whatever it is. Russia is an adversary of the United States, wants to dismantle our influence in Europe,
Trump seems to agree. He seems to agree that we should have less influence in Europe, that we should detach ourselves from the NATO alliance, that we should even dismantle our own cybersecurity and make ourselves more vulnerable to Russia, make ourselves more vulnerable to their influence. It's shocking to see a Republican president essentially capitulate to almost everything Vladimir Putin could possibly want, the full menu, his Christmas list of what he wants from the United States and wants to do to us. Donald Trump wants to get there.
Hang on, I got to get this. I can't believe it. I got to get this.
This is so bizarre. This fantasy about Russia has gone so far into the left, it's just insane. We'll take a break here and come back and talk about whether Trump has actually broken the law. 741 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Got your weather for you right here. Austin, Texas, in July 20th, which is today, a story on WTOL, Austin, $22 million of liquid meth found in a woman's car. In jugs that looked like detergent, liquid detergent jugs, police say a woman is facing federal charges after 75 pounds of liquid crystal meth worth $2 million were found in her car. They pulled over Celine Lisbeth Ayala over last week for speeding. She said she was traveling to Dallas for a work meeting, but then changed her story. She became verbally aggressive, and so the cops were basically very curious about what was going on. So they brought a narcotic dog, and the dog hit on the jugs. Woman's four-year-old daughter was present at the time. She said it was her second meth delivery. Wow, I wonder what she got paid for the first one. Here's Jonathan Turley on the perverse hyperventilation over wanting to impeach Trump and about the Putin-Trump treason. It's bizarre and dangerous. If Donald Trump can't talk to the leader of another country, how could he be president? And this is from Fox.
Some issues with the interpretation of the criminal code, referring to treason arguments, for example, which he has called bizarre and dangerous, given what we know. Here now, constitutional law attorney and George Washington law professor, Jonathan Turley. Good to see you here tonight, sir. I want to start with this developing story that we are following that has changed even in the last 5 minutes, because a few moments ago, that there was a second undisclosed meeting that President Trump had during the G20 summit in Germany with Vladimir Putin. The original story that it was behind closed doors and it only had one translator, the Russian translator. Now the White House, just moments ago, is saying that is incorrect and that the second previously undisclosed meeting was at the dinner where Melania was seated next to President Putin, and President Trump got up from his chair and his translator, went over to where they were standing, and spoke with them for some period of time. I don't know the length of that time as of yet. Is there any issue with that legally? Politically is another story.
No, I think it does reflect the level of hyperventilation we have in Washington now. The story broke, and all of a sudden there's questions of, well, there's more undisclosed meetings. These were two world leaders at the G20 meeting. It was a meeting of world leaders. The fact that they had these types of meetings, whether they were public or not, is not surprising. It's certainly not evidence of any crime. I think the problem is that people are now looking through this glass darkly. Whenever they see any type of new meeting, they see evidence of collusion or they see what they want to see. Prosecutions require something more. I mean, you need to, first of all, define a crime. Collusion is not a crime under the code. When you talk about things like Donald Trump Jr., people are so eager to say, well, now we have a crime here, that they fail to actually define it. And people, I don't think, want to be in a world where a meeting like that could be treason. people have said this is prima facie evidence of treason. Would you want to be in a country where treason was broadly defined in that way? The framers defined treason very narrowly because they lived in a country where people were accused of being traitors because they were unpopular or they were political opponents. There are serious things to investigate here, but you don't help that by concluding that there's a strong evidence of a crime without a defined crime.
All right, so I had to turn that up. I don't know what happened to the volume, but let's take our last break here. And I've got a story from you for you, totally different. Death from space, gamma ray bursts explained. In the 700s, it's about 750, there was a massive gamma ray burst that if it were closer, could have cooked the entire globe like a giant turkey. We'll be right back. The deadliest thing in the universe, gamma rays. And I was looking into whether a burst of gamma rays could affect dating of the Earth. Now, I've just been studying this topic. The dating methods are not by carbon, because carbon is from living things. You couldn't date the age of the Earth from that. It only lasts up to 50,000 years. What you use is uranium to lead or potassium to argon dating. But here is the question that I had in my mind when I was looking into this, was whether there was an impact from the gamma rays on how they measure the Earth's age. Check this out. Gamma ray bursts, deadliest things in the universe.
March 2008. Stargazers watched open mouthed as a faint light in the sky blinked into life and less than a minute later faded away. A rare treat for the stargazers, but a stark reminder that our planet is in the firing line from the most powerful type of killer star in the universe, a cosmic superweapon known as a gamma ray burst.
Gamma ray bursts, these cosmic ray guns, are the most powerful, the most deadly weapon that the universe has come up with.
The jets of a gamma ray burst actually don't last very long. They go off in really just a couple of minutes. But in that time, the energy released is equivalent to 100 trillion nuclear weapons going off every second for 100 billion years.
Gamma ray bursts are super high concentrated beams of high energy light. And they pack in a punch to reduce nearby planets to vapor.
They're a kind of supernova, but it's more like a supernova. The idea being that instead of blowing up a star and letting the debris expand in every direction, what if somehow, instead of blowing up in every direction, it blew up in one direction, that it was somehow focusing all of that material and it was being shot out like a beam from the explosion site? The key insight here is that we're not talking about something that's exploding like a sphere and spreading its energy out in all directions. A gamma ray burst is beamed, so it's taking all of its energy but pointing it right at us and firing it directly towards us. That's why it's so powerful.
The 2008 gamma ray burst landed a direct hit on the Earth, but it had come from so far away, this super weapon appeared to have lost its punch. Astronomers quickly calculated where the beam had come from, and they pinpointed a location on the far side of the universe. Incredibly, this cosmic sniper's bullet had been traveling through space for 7 billion years, far longer than the age of our solar system.
We're talking about something that was so energetic that had you been looking at it with your naked eye, you could see it, even though it was more than 7 billion light years away.
Can you imagine something that energetic, something that violent, appearing as a gentle little star going on and off in the sky?
Think about that for a second. You've got a thing that's so bright that you could see it by naked eye, even though it's halfway across the observable universe.
Gamma ray. Don't let a gamma ray ruin your day. Here's a little Jim Gaffigan, National French Fry Day. speaking of getting fried.
We lie to ourselves when we eat McDonald's fries. We're like, oh, they're so thin, they couldn't be bad.
Sometimes in science.
Pardon me, interrupted by another gamma ray. Here's Gaffigan, but let me just mention first, before I restart that, Earth was blasted with a gamma ray burst during the 8th century, 774, 775, and they believe it was a black hole cosmic radiation blast, and that's why it wasn't seen. And so you heard the rest of the story. Kind of interesting. Here's your Jim Gaffigan for the day.
We lie to ourselves when we eat McDonald's fries. We're like, oh, they're so thin, they couldn't be fattening. You ever eat too many McDonald's fries? Of course not! There's never enough of them. There's always that moment when you're eating McDonald's fries where you're like, what happened? Where'd they go? Then you start scrounging for the fry crumbs. You're like, No, that's just a piece of paper from the straw. But it was touching the fries, so. Sometimes there's a loose fry in the bag. You know the bonus fry? It's like Jesus is up in heaven. Give him an extra fry. They'll pay it forward.
All right, so. Interesting show today, although Frankie found it boring. The guy, Dr. Justice, is a fascinating person to talk to. He's very fast on his feet, and he's thought out this stuff a long time ago. He told me he had a massive library before he sold it, which I assume had to do with the selling of the church building. But I thought that was kind of cool. They had this church. They met there for a number of years, and then they sold it, and now they meet at various places. Might sound inconvenient, but it might kind of focus more on the fact that church is people and not a building. So Senator Mitch McConnell, time to wipe the slate clean on Obamacare. They got to do something, folks. They absolutely have to do something if they're going to make it. At 7:59, Kelly O'Connell, take you out with the Sundays. Thanks for hanging out with me today. I really enjoyed it. Blog Talk Radio, Kelly O'Connell. Blog Talk Radio, Kelly O'Connell. If anything happens to this show, that's where we can meet in the future. I think I'm going to do a morning show from there if they change the format. Have a great day. Kelly O'Connell. Ciao. Go down to jazz, I know.